Welcome to the Divorce View Talk Show with your co-hosts, Joni Winberg and Rosalind Sadaka, your divorce mentor team. If you're contemplating divorce, going through a divorce, or are ready to move forward after your divorce, then we've got you covered. We'll even help you get back into the dating game. This show will lift your spirits, answer your questions, and guide you through the challenges you're facing. And our guest divorce experts will provide insights, tips, and tools to support you and the children you love during and after divorce. And now, here's your divorce mentor team, Joni and Rosalind.
Welcome to the Divorce View Talk Show, where we support you before, during, and after divorce. Hello, it's Joni Winberg, divorce mentor and facilitator of the one-of-a-kind How to Emotionally and Financially Survive a Divorce. And I'm always thrilled to do the show together with my co-host, Rosalind Sadaka. Hello, Roz.
Hi, Joni. Good to see you. I'm Rosalind Sadaka. I'm founder of the Child Centered Divorce Network. I'm a divorce and parenting mentor and author of How Do I Tell the Kids About the Divorce? And I'm excited to introduce you to our guest today because she has a wealth of information that's really valuable for anyone who's divorcing and is also a parent. Her name is Dr. Andrea Korn. She's a psychologist, and she has a special interest in protecting the families who are dealing with divorce and protecting the children who are so easily affected. So welcome, Dr. Korn.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here today with you, both of you.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Before we get started, because our topic today is, you know, what your children are not saying during and after divorce that we need to know, but just give us a little bit of background and really your interest in helping parents during and after divorce, Dr. Korn.
I'm happy to do that. I have been a licensed clinical psychologist for over 20 years. And how you might ask I got into the practice, because I too was divorced. I was divorced when my children were toddlers and preschoolers and before the law understood developmental issues. So it's been a very significant area for me and one that I've advocated for years. I even have an article in the Florida Bar that was written in 1996 with a fellow attorney about developmental issues and helping parents understand what each stage that a child goes through from infancy through adolescence. So this has been something that I've been very attuned to, very attentive, and have focused so much of my practice on, because I like to educate and inform parents, because as children grow from infants to toddlers to preschoolers, school age, and adolescents, various issues change with respect to co-parenting, the communication, the interactions, and how they help their children as they're going through and dealing with the process too.
Mm. That's such an important point you're making, because a lot of people, when they go through divorce, their children are a certain age, and they're not thinking ahead of the fact that in 3 or 5 years, those children are going to be in an entirely different place, and the aftermath of the divorce is still going to be with them, and they may be feeling differently about it or asking different questions or having different emotions about things that are going on. So I'm so glad you're going to be addressing this. It's a very important point that everyone in the child-centered divorce community and in the Divorce View community really wants to make sure people are listening and hearing about.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And just to add one other thing that I really want parents to think about is to think about when the conflicts or the problems started in the home, because they could have started when the child could have been an infant, a toddler, but they might have not separated or divorced for 5 or 10 or 12 years later. Mm-hmm. But yet those underlying feelings that the child may never have been able to speak about, because he or she may not have quite understood them, right, but they were there. And so oftentimes, while the child may be much older, there's still underlying residue, and that's sort of what I want to address today with all of you.
Absolutely.
Because it's not just the age of the child, sometimes it's when it started.
And you know, I think as far as I always say to people, children see and hear a lot more than we think they do, and that's so important. And we probably have all dealt with people during and after divorce that have young adults, and there's still concerns and issues there going on. So, Dr. Korn, I'm really excited to jump into this. So, one of the topics we wanted to talk about is how divorce affects children differently, and that's, you know, as far as adolescents and then getting into young adults. So talk about that at different ages and how parents, depending on the age of their children at this time, can support them.
All right. Well, first and foremost, most parents pay attention to the spoken word. And most children by the age of, let's say, first grade, kindergarten, they're able to communicate. They can tell you when they're mad and they're upset and I don't like you, mommy or daddy. Why did you, you know, why weren't you there for me on Saturday? Why didn't you come to my sporting event? But what they're not often paying attention to is the body language, the voice tone, how the child is interacting with them when they return. So often they're so focused on trying, you know, the parent may feel guilty, the parent may feel bad, the parent may be upset. And so often parents are focusing so much on their own feelings that they also need to pay very careful attention to what their child not only is saying, but what they're not saying, but they're telling you by how they make you feel. When I say you, it's a generic you to the parent, to the mother or the father, mm-hmm. the caregiver, whoever that may be. But they need to pay attention because they have to respond in an attuned way that's appropriate to their child. If the child comes back mad upon the visitation and the parent reacts angrily, like, well, how dare you be mad at me? All that does is shut down the communication. And so what's really important for parents to think about is not to disregard. I have to say there's parallel tracks. They can't disregard what they're feeling. And I'm not expecting them to be a therapist because they can't, because their heartstrings are greatly attached to their children. But to try for those moments to think about, what is my son or daughter trying to say to me? Mm-hmm. Not so much in their words, but if they're trying to induce guilt, or if they're trying to induce blame, or if they're trying to induce shame, or any sorts of feelings that any child from probably kindergarten on up could do, I really want that parent to think about, that child is saying that they're hurt, they're angry, they're upset. Most children don't really understand what a divorce means. If you think about it from preschool, probably almost to middle school, the word divorce, court, it could mean it's abstract. It doesn't have meaning for a child as an adolescent. They can understand what a courtroom is, what a judge. But if you tell a seven-year-old, are you talking about the basketball court, the tennis court? It's an abstract word that they can't wrap their heads around. It's so you have to understand that, you know, they may hear everything the parent is saying, but it doesn't necessarily mean they understand what they're saying. Mm-hmm. So a child can appear very mature. Yes, I understand you and dad went to court, you and mom went to court, but they don't really know what that means. And so it's very important to try to help a child understand that while these are rules that we may not like, they're ones we have to follow because of our state, because these are the guidelines, we want to work together. And the more that two parents can try to co-parent in somewhat of a consistent or a way where there is healthy communication, you know it's going to bode better for the child.
And can you imagine adding to that if the parents aren't getting along and so they're having frustration and they're blaming each other, so the child not only doesn't understand the court and the whole process of divorce, but then they see the parents attacking each other. So, you know, I always say to parents, you know, let's value and appreciate what that child is feeling. You know, how it's like we can't stand in their physical shoes. So try to understand instead of blaming the child that they're being difficult or I can't deal with this child. You know, for the parents to turn around and blame the kids for just having this confusion. So you probably see it all.
That's exactly what I'm trying to talk about, which is the child comes home angry, and if the parent mirrors that anger by being angry back, it becomes more confusing because the child then ends up feeling bad for having those mad feelings, which isn't fair to the child. And then it doesn't help the child make sense of, you know, the fact perhaps they have a right to be mad. What if they were playing in the neighborhood? They were enjoying a game. And of course, the visitation has to work. Well, it's not either parent's fault. It's situational. So it's very important to make these distinctions, you know, to help the child. In addition, young children, elementary age children, they're black and white thinkers. And so they tend to think in things as good or bad, right or wrong. Not until they become more adolescent can they think in more complex ways, which is why they take biology and geometry. The point being, a parent could come to the pickup line 10 minutes late. That child sees them as the bad divorced parent. Another parent could do something different, and they think they're the good parent. It's not good or bad. And so children, it's about helping them understand that, you know, mommy and daddy, it's not good or bad, but we have these different nuances. And so for the parent, in terms of what they're not hearing, if they see things that the child may not be expressing, but they're stamping their feet, they're slamming the doors, they're oppositional, they're defiant, they're sullen, they don't want to listen, they're not cooperating. These are all signs that they are communicating. They can't maybe say it in words, but they're certainly letting you know, you the parent know, that something's upsetting them. And it really requires the parent to ask, not in an angry way, not in a judgmental or threatening way, but I need you to tell me more about this. I don't understand. And I'm specifically using I statements because that's what a parent has to do. They need to be able to say, I guess I'm missing something, but I hear you're mad. I can tell by the look on your face. It's so important for that parent to be like a mirror to reflect back what they see in a way that a child feels heard. Because unless that child feels heard and they feel that attunement, they're going to feel controlled. They're going to feel resentment. They're going to feel that the lines of communication are just going one way. And that's when kids either shut down and they become more reserved, maybe inhibited, they go within, but they're not telling the parent how they feel. And sometimes what therapy allows is that safe space for the feelings to come out. Now, not every child needs to go to therapy that goes through a divorce, so I'm suggesting to parents to create that space if they can, not looking to blame the other parent or attack the other one, because these children, every child's a product of two parents. And so when that child hears the other parent negating, attacking them, the parent, they feel attacked too. And so it's so important. I know in the heat of the moment for any adult, it can be hard at times. It can be impossible at times. And we know parenting is the hardest thing in the world to do. But when you go through a divorce, it's even more difficult.
It is. We can all verify that.
Yes. Because the emotions, they're heightened. Sometimes they're raw. And it's not about escalating them, but it's finding a way to calm them down. It's finding a way to contain them. It's finding a way to listen. And even if you may not like what was said or disagree or know the child can't really understand the other side, it's not about needing to prove a point. It's really more about to be able to reflect back and say, I can see how that really hurt you. I hear how much that's bothering me. Your behavior just showed me how upset you are. And that allows that child to feel heard. And that's not the time for consequences. That's not the time for discipline. That's not the time for taking something away. It's acknowledging that sometimes, how else do we show our feelings? Children are often, if they can't find the words, they're going to amplify, like turning up the volume on the radio. So they'll have the temper tantrum. They'll shout. They'll be kicking. You know, they'll throw something. That's a communication just as much as no. or I'm not talking, or everything's great. You know, that's another kind of communication, because they're not telling you something, but they're also speaking volumes. Even silence can be volume. Sometimes a child won't talk because it's a control. They know that they can upset that parent by not responding, by not answering. And so, ironically, sometimes silence can be deafening. I've had children of divorce in my therapy room, and they don't say a word because they're going to punish that parent by not opening up. And so it's very hard. I have ways to work on that. But the point being is, it shows tremendous willpower. I give them credit. I said, wow, you are so determined not to say anything to prove something. And I give you credit for that. But this is my point to help the parents. It's not about pointing a finger. It's about gaining greater awareness, greater understanding. Because the children are so often in the middle. It's not their fault. And as the parent, every parent has to try to do their best to disentangle their own feelings, their own biases, their own beliefs, their own knowledge from allowing that child to have their own separate thoughts and feelings. As they get older, as they go through adolescence and young adulthood, and they've had more experience with adults, whether it's their own parents or other parents, then they have a better idea of how that parent really was to them. And sometimes it takes until a child is out of the house, till they're in college, or they're on their own, whether they're single or married, and then they start to think about how their mother or father treated them or what was going on in their own household, and they're able to have a much different perspective.
Mm-hmm. And would you say, we have a little echo here, maybe mute one of you, okay. Would you also say that if parents don't acknowledge and help them feel heard, that this can progress over the years, and then maybe the kids start, when they're adolescents, young teens, that they're starting to, you know, finding that feeling of acceptance somewhere else, maybe with other kids or drugs or, you know, so can it lead to that if they don't feel heard? Have you seen that?
Absolutely. I see it all the time because mm-hmm. a child, what are they going to do with all that pain or that anger that's bottled up inside? It has to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. So whether it goes to, all right, my parent isn't listening, but my peer is, and my friend likes to drink or smoke pot, and I'm going to numb myself because I'm hurting so much. So there's no question about it that if the child doesn't find the acceptance, the understanding, and to have their feelings heard, not that they have to agree with their feelings, and that's the big difference, mm-hmm. but their feelings are heard, then there's less likelihood that that child will want to act out and either engage in some sort of behavior that could be self-hurting, self-destructive. It could be cutting. It could be drinking. It could be substance abuse. It could be anything that they know the parent doesn't like because they feel, well, you don't hear me, so I'm not going to listen to you. You want me to do my homework. You want me to make the grades. You want me to go out for sports. But I feel you don't hear me, so why should I care? And honestly, when that child has that attitude of, I don't care, that's another concern because on some level they're saying, you're not caring or listening to me, so why should I listen to you? So maybe I'm going to tune you out and I'm not going to do the things I know I should. I know I should make the grades. I know I should clean my room. You know, I know I should eat healthy. But instead, they can overeat to it's a way to stuff down the bad feelings. They can dress in a way that they know that's going to upset their parents. They can not study and listen to music or watch TV and things that they know they shouldn't be. So it comes out in all different ways. And while for some parents, you know, feelings are intangible, it's hard. You know, they can see, you know, if the child hits them or kicks something or breaks something. But unless they can try to identify or empathize and honestly put themselves in their child's shoes to think about, well, what might be causing that, then that parent is really somehow they aren't hearing their child. They can see everything, and yet they're not hearing it. And I think some parents have difficulty. The concept is called mentalization, and it's being able to think about how they're feeling in the presence of whatever their child is doing, but how does it make them feel? And if it makes the parent feel very uncomfortable, then what is that parent doing? Are they reacting? Are they dismissing the feelings? I know this is complicated, but it's really designed to help that parent realize that they can't dismiss their own feelings, because in a way they're going to parallel and dismiss their own child's feelings. And or if they overreact, then that child gets the message that, well, my anger is not acceptable, but somehow yours is, and that's not fair, and that's not right. And so these things are complicated, but I'm trying to give general examples to be of help.
Well, I think the bottom line is just for parents to realize that their children are individuals, and they're all unique, and they all have feelings. And so I think if parents start to realize that, then that's going to help them understand that, you know, what is this child really feeling? And I might not know, but gosh, I mean, adults even want to always feel heard and understood. And that goes for children as well. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I agree. And if parents can just do that and to realize they don't have to be right, they don't have to have the child on their side, but if they have their child's respect and the child feels heard, validated, supported, not ignored, dismissed, minimized, or punished for their feelings, things are going to work out so much better. Mm-hmm. And to know that, as you said, they have their own mind, they have their own temperament, they have their own personality, they're going to have their own perspective. You cannot expect a child to understand a divorce the way a parent does. And you can, and so that's why it behooves the parent to be able to put themselves in the child's place.
Yes, and this is such important information you're sharing with everyone. I just wanted to stop you for a moment so that you could share your contact information and let people know how they can find you. A phone number, a website, what is the best way of accessing you and your services?
Well, I appreciate that very much. I am located in Boca Raton, Florida. My phone number is 954-942-3344. My website is listed below, www.dr for doctor, but no period, dr, and then my name, Andrea, A-N-D-R-E-A, Corn, CORN.com. And if you go to my website, I have been writing about helping children and parents of divorce for 20 years in various publications. And so you can click on the toolbar and you can find a wealth of information, and it's free and you can access it. And it's my pleasure to be of service here today. So thank you.
That is wonderful. Do you have some words of wisdom that you can leave us with so that our listeners can take back some insights that'll really help them make a shift in understanding this on the deepest possible level?
Certainly. First and foremost, use the I statement as much as you can when talking to your child about his or her feelings, and be a mirror and reflect back what you see or what you don't see. For instance, I see you're upset. I hear this is bothering you. Or I don't see you being angry when XYZ occurred. It could go either way. So the I statement, mirroring back, being aware of voice tone. If your son or daughter comes home and they're angry and, why didn't you do this, or I'm mad at you, don't respond, well, I'm mad at you, because, you know, it's not about upping the ante and escalating over them. It's about trying your best to stay calm. I hear you're upset. Let's try to discuss this. You know, maybe there's a misunderstanding. Maybe I didn't get something. To be able to allow your child to be angry or sad or hurt without telling them, stop. Why are you acting like, you shouldn't be acting like this. What's wrong with you after all I've done for you? So what I'm really trying to say is it's so important. As much as you may want to say it, sometimes the best thing is not to say it, which is why we have two ears and one mouth. So sometimes holding one's tongue, biting one's tongue, believe me, I have imaginary holes in mine.
It's called duct tape.
So reflect back, be like a mirror. Use I statements. As your child gets angrier, try to stay calmer. I know that's hard, but if any parent can learn that, they'll appreciate how much it's going to help their relationships.
Definitely. And long term, I think, too, they're going to think back and remember mom or dad really, you know, handled this, you know, beautifully or helped me. Yeah. And they're going to be the role model for their own kids. So to me, it's a bigger picture.
What I also want to just end with is that's a way of containing the emotions, because when a child doesn't feel heard or an adolescent doesn't feel heard, they're going to continue. That's why there's when you say, oh, you're a broken record, I'm so tired of hearing this. Mm-hmm. They're the broken record because they didn't feel heard. If they felt hurt, they wouldn't have to keep repeating themselves and repeating themselves, but they keep trying, thinking one of these times they're going to get it, but they don't.
Definitely. Well, Dr. Korn, it's been just so fabulous to have you on the show. So much information, very, you know, valuable information that parents to me can walk away with. And I hope they listen to this several times if they need to help them, because you've just really made it to me very clear and easy to understand. And really, I don't think it's that difficult if all we have to do is practice our listening and help them feel understood.
Well, I think you're right. And just so you understood, I took a lot of child development and theory, and I make it in a very easy, user-friendly way. So I do want to make it so parents can understand. But everything that I did speak about today, I could tell you it was grounded in Piagetian theory, Erikson's psychosocial theory, attachment theory. So because it's really about helping a child feel safe, protected, secure, that parent can be that source of emotional availability, because it's about the parent showing flexibility, adaptability, and resilience, because that's what a child needs. I know we're all human. They're kind. We're all going to make mistakes. It's not about the mistake, but I'll end in the words of Donald Winnicott, a famous pediatrician from Great Britain and psychoanalyst who talked about good enough parenting and mothering and fathering, and that's what it's about, good enough. We don't have to be perfect. We just have to do the best we can.
That's great.
That's a great way to end. And thank you so much for being on the show. Thanks.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. And all to our listeners, please go to divorceview.com where you can listen to this several times, as many times as you need to, take notes. And then also we have a podcast where if you're on the go, you can listen to our podcast in the car or wherever on your mobile phone. Roz, before we go, tell us a little bit about yourself and pull it together, and we'll end the show in a minute.
Yes, I just want to remind people that if you visit childcenteredivorce.com, you'll get a free book on post-divorce parenting there, as well as a wealth of resources on all facets of parenting and divorce. And my newest program is Parenting Beyond Divorce, a co-parenting program that you'll find if you click on the coaching button.
Great, thanks. And then and this is why Roz and I have connected, because we're just so wanting to support parents during and after divorce. I'm kind of on a different angle where I'm the facilitator, worrying about the emotions, and now our new program also includes how to financially survive divorce, and I'm actually doing that with a financial advisor. And you can find all of that information on Fresh Start After Divorce. So thanks again to our guest, Dr. Korn. Thanks again. And then to Roz, always a pleasure. And to our listeners, we always enjoy being here for you. So we hope that you tune in again next week. Thanks again. Bye.